Y'all need to, I guess, push this. So we're at the audit meeting prior to the True Commission meeting.
That's correct.
We'll say August 3rd. Do we want to start with the audits?
Start with introductions.
Well, Mr. Tommy, you want to introduce yourself?
Sure. Tommy Carter, Council Auditor's Office.
Thelma Roundsville, Northwest CPAC.
And Charles Barr, Vice Chairman of the True Commission.
Jeff Clements, Council Research.
Yeah, you know, I don't really have an agenda for this, and I hadn't been to one of these yet. So if you want to just start with them, we got them here in front of us.
Yep.
I don't know how many we've released since the last True Audit Commission meeting.
There's been
quite a few.
Been quite a, I got a whole stack of audits in here.
Yes. Since the last True Commission meeting, our office has released four reports. Two of the reports I mentioned the last True Commission meeting, but due to timing, so them being presented to the Finance Committee,
Okay.
The first audit is Public Works Construction Related Vendors Audit. It's number 869. It was released on June 6th of 2023. This audit, we did this audit to conduct an audit of contracts awarded and payments made to three construction-related vendors that were paid the most from October 1, 2016 through September 30 of 2020. And that's through the Public Works construction-related vendors. What we found overall, construction contracts appeared to be procured in a proper manner in accordance with Chapter 126 of the Municipal Code, and payments made to the construction contractors were consistent with the contract, properly supported and properly authorized and accurately calculated. However, we found some issues with payment timeliness, as well as other issues that needed to be addressed. Was some of the other issues we found, Public Works lacked standard operating procedures regarding the awarding and management of construction contracts. Given the amount of dollars for this, through the vendors that are paid to the vendors through Public Works, and the uniqueness of this, we felt that they needed, that Public Works needed its own standard operating procedures for dealing with construction related vendors. Because it was just, we found that change orders to extend contracts were approved after the contract expiration, and there were instances where work related to change orders was paid prior to the change order being approved. So we also found where procurement had issues with calculating bid amounts that did not impact, it did not impact on who was awarded, but there were just some issues on calculating the bid amounts. And we also found that retainage fees, for example, if a contract is for $100,000 and contractor wins it, but there's a 10% retainage, and the contractor gets $90,000 and holds the $10,000 until the proper satisfaction of the contract, and then they get the 10. That was not being tracked in the financial system. So we found instances of that as well. And I don't know how in-depth you want me to get, because we have 30 minutes and I've got four
on it. Let me ask you a quick question.
Sure.
So, like on the prepaid change orders,
uh-huh.
Did you guys have a recommendation for them?
We do.
I read all this. I just don't remember exactly where it is.
That's okay. I can get to it. Change orders approved after the expiration date. Our recommendation was...
Which page are you on?
Page 9. We recommended that Public Works Department initiate change orders before contract expiration with enough time left for all parties to sign off on an approved change order before the contract expires. And also The other finding that was related to that was finding 2-1 on page 16. And that's where we found that change order work that was done for the change order was paid before the change order was approved. Our recommendation on this one was we recommended the Public Works Department ensure no payments are made for work related to change orders until after the change order is properly approved. Additionally, change orders should be properly approved prior to the work being performed. But if not possible, the reason it could not be approved prior to the work being performed should be documented in the change order request. They agreed with us. So there were... the interesting... One thing I found interesting in this audit, on page 25, the supplemental opportunity for improvement number two,
mm-hmm.
planning and budgeting for resurfacing. The middle paragraph there, benchmarking average life road life expectancy. As of October 2019, Jacksonville had 3,738 miles of road to maintain per the Public Works Department. From fiscal year 15-16 to fiscal year 19-20, the city resurfaced, on average, 45 miles per year per the Public Works Department. At this rate, if no changes are implemented, a road will be resurfaced on average every 80-plus years, which is basically 3,700.
We have a lot of those on the north side, I think.
on the west side, too. 3,738 miles of road maintained divided by 45 miles resurfaced per year. The average lifespan of an asphalt road is 15 to 20 years per the Florida Department of Transportation design manual. So using this information as a benchmark, the city would have to resurface between 187 and 249 miles per year. The average cost to resurface 1 mile of road was $225,000 in 2020 per the Public Works Department. Imagine that's gone up a little bit since
then. Yeah.
And so, you know, we recommended they should consider adopting a quantitative resurfacing goal to assist in how much funding is needed and which roads are resurfaced. And they agreed with our recommendation. And overall, we found that payments were properly supported, authorized, and they were accurately calculated. Just they had said some other issues.
One thing caught my eye on page 23, the supplemental finding 2 there. It's per city monthly reports not submit, so that they didn't submit reports, no explanation for.
On page 23,
or rates didn't match or weren't tracked in the EBO office. And no explanation. Did you guys follow? It's right there in the middle on page 23. We found the following issues for 14 contracts.
Oh, okay. JSIB requirements. Had the JSIB requirements?
Yeah. Yep.
Yes. For the city monthly report.
And not provided an explanation for discrepancy. Did you ever get an explanation?
To my knowledge, I don't believe we got it. I don't know if we got an explanation or not.
You would think that would be something.
It'll be followed up on in the future. We did get a response from the JSIB office, the Equal Business Opportunity office. They agreed with the recommendation. They're going to establish procedures to ensure monitoring and compliance in the area.
Okay.
Yes. No. We. To my knowledge, we did not.
All right. Well, I mean, I just had that comment about that.
Okay.
And that, followed up with the change order stuff.
Right.
I don't have any more.
On to the, this is a follow-up on the JTA payroll audit. It's report number 763C.
Yep.
This was the third follow-up on this audit of 763. The original audit was originally issued in March of 2015. We followed up in 2018, 2021, and 2023. With this follow-up, we found that all outstanding issues were cleared, and so this report will be closed. And
okay. We were pretty big ones.
Next one I have is Public Works Department, Public Buildings Division, Security Guard Contract Audit. It's report number 870. It was released on June 14th of 2023. We looked at payments related to security guard services. The security guard services that we looked at excluded public libraries, parks, and JSO. It was all other city buildings. Found overall that payments were properly supported and accurately calculated and correctly authorized. We did find issues with the timeliness during the first part of our scope, audit scope. The audit scope was payments from October 1 of 2021 through March 31 of 2022. And so we found overall there were some documentation retention issues with pay rate and staffing schedules. The billing rate for one position was overstated and resulted in overbilling of approximately $2,000. We found that security guards were working in excess of the maximum amount allowed in a 24-hour or 48-hour period per the contract. I believe that the contract stated that security guards weren't allowed to work more than 16 hours in a 24-hour period, and we found issues with that.
Back on the 2,000, like huh? when they're overpaid by $2,000, is that just what happens there? Anything? Is it the, I guess it's the company that gets overpaid from the city? Is that right? Where was that?
Recommended
what page you
on page six.
Okay.
That public division communicate that an incorrect rate was being charged and request the rate be fixed, and that public buildings division needs to ensure that is carefully reviewing any future rate changes for CPI.
Okay.
We also recommend that city look into whether any corrective action is needed to recover the amount lost due to the correct rate. And the auditee responded for that specifically. The overpayment was communicated to the vendor, and a credit has been received. So the credit
okay.
for that.
Good.
With the inappropriate security guard, I think 11 security guard hour, worked more than 16 hours in a 24-hour period or more than 24 hours in a 48-hour period. Contract requires that security guards work no more than 16. Per the contract, exceptions may be made with written approval. Across the 25 invoices, there were a total of 30 instances where the hours were violated based on the attendance.
Is that an overtime thing or like a safety thing? Or do you know?
It's probably, I'm not sure. I would think it would be more from a safety issue because or not, normal people are not aware.
That's why I said, is it safety?
It's more safety.
Especially in that position.
Yes. And I know for a while, it's from my understanding, it's getting better. They were having, like everybody, issues containing personnel, especially coming right out of COVID.
Yeah.
So I know several of the attendants that have security guard, they were having some issues and they're getting better now. Any other questions on this one?
I'm good.
The procurement audit for informal purchases of supplies. In procurement, the informal purchase of supplies, this relates to purchase of supplies that are $65,000 or less. It's informal. Anything over 65 gets, or 65 and more, and greater than 65 is a formal purchase. We found that, the reason we did this review, we conducted an audit of the city's informal procurement process for supplies, which includes supplies with an estimated value less than $65,000. The city recently implemented a new system for purchasing informal purchases. Therefore, we thought it was important to conduct an audit of the new processes. Got the new system in and just starting it. And it's for informal right now. For informal purchases, they're still working on implementing that. So, but before they got too far down the line, we thought, well, we'll audit this and see, what we find. Anyway, we found that generally processed requests for formal purchases in a manner that was consistent with the municipal code. We did find several, including some significant issues with the controls surrounding the process. Specifically, we found various issues with the procurement manual, including unwritten, incomplete, and outdated policies and procedures. Found where requisitions could bypass the procurement division and therefore purchase orders created without proper processes. With the new system, system access issues. 16 employees could create a vendor and a PO and submit the invoice for payment. The same employee could do all that. We found there were gaps in the procurement data. For example, requisition numbers. We found that some exempt records were not properly protected. Found where a vendor's business ID number or FEI number, maybe a social, I'm not sure which. Anyway, was not properly redacted. So for just a little bit of background on this one. On February 29th of 2020, the city implemented a new financial system that replaced the previous system for informal purchases. And
what page are you on?
I'm on the introduction, the last paragraph. To request an informal purchase of supplies in the system using agency staff submit an electronic document called a requisition, and that the system processes by obtaining electronic approval from one or more design users in the using agency before delivering the approved requisition to the buyers in the procurement division for review. The estimated cost is more than $2,500. The buyer approves the using agency's request by submitting a second electronic system, which is a negotiation where they are soliciting responses from the suppliers of these requested goods and services. So that's kind of how it starts off. And the system being new, found various issues with the procurement manual on page 5, an internal control weakness. Per the manual, prescribed the operation of the city's procurement system be followed. This gives several of the systems of what the manual says. Our audit procedures disclosed issues related to the manual. Some processes the procurement division established in practice were not written. Other processes were described in one or more separate written procedures, but not addressed in the procurement manual. Some written procedures omitted critical details. Specific issues noted how agencies should begin the procurement process. These are not referenced in the procurement manual. How agencies and buyers should process contract encumbrances, and how using agencies and buyers should apply Buy American preference per section 126 of the municipal code. Then there were some unwritten incomplete policies and procedures. There's a quite a list here on page 5 and 6 of items.
And this is a fairly new system, you said?
It was implemented in, I believe, 2020.
It's still being implemented in phases. But before, like I said, they went too far down the road with it, we wanted to form an audit.
Thank goodness.
To see if it's doing what it's supposed to do. They say they're on their way to fixing them, and we'll follow up on this.
Well, it looks like you're doing good.
I have a general question.
Sure.
It appears to me that without an audit, there aren't many checks and balances within departments that they identify some of the things that are identified by an audit. Do some of the areas have internal, like, checks and balances, you know, someone that kind of keeps an eye on the hen house, or
well, theoretically, we would like to think so.
Okay. All right.
But I don't. That would be more of an administration question. But our job is to. We do compliance audits, and so we do audits to see that they're complying with policies and procedures, and that's.
Yes. Thank goodness for audits.
Well, I want to say I'm impressed. You know, I had no idea there's so many audits. We've looked at tons of them since I've been involved, and a lot of stuff is found. So have audits been going on for a long time, for like years? And do you find the same stuff every?
We find.
And are these audits, I don't remember, are they quarterly or yearly or?
No, well, each constitutional officer has to be audited once in 5 years. That's the only.
Okay.
But we kind of work as the internal auditors for the city.
So when you go back and audit again, do you see the same stuff happening or not happening?
We hope not.
Hopefully this will correct it.
These audits will be followed up on, and make sure all of these issues are clear. But then we will go from that to. We look at, we have a risk assessment plan that we look at to determine how we're going to audit and
who we're going to audit. Yeah. Okay. Good evening.
That's all the reports that I have.
Okay, I'm good with them.
Okay.
So I guess this, Ms. Vilma, you have anything to add?
No. He's answered my question.
Yeah.
And I'm thankful, as I said, for audits.
So I guess the audit meeting will be adjourned.
Have you been confirmed?
Yeah, but I wasn't part of this other meeting.
Yes, you could have been. Yeah.